Music provided by Armstrong. Visit armstrongofficial.com to hear more badass music.
Welcome to the TriCast Gaming Podcast.
Greetings and welcome everyone to episode number 113 of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. I am your host, Philip Grimlock-Keeney, and I'm joined tonight by Jason Neon Zandrus. Jason, how are you doing? We're recording a little bit late. We kind of pushed into Saturday. There was a lot of news this week. We needed to give ourselves enough time. We're all working folk. I know you were traveling this week, but how are you doing tonight?
Doing good. I was smiling because I'm happy to hear you're reading episode number 113 instead of 113. And you were talking about how it felt like you had to fumble. And so now you have already adjusted.
That's right.
I don't know if you did it on purpose, but I traveled a ton. I basically have played nothing this week. So I will be really lame in the what are we playing portion when we get to that of the show. But I had a good time. Me and my wife went for a work trip up in Mackinac Island, Detroit. It's an island that is much colder than here in the south up near Canada. horse-drawn carriage only on this island. It was a very unique experience, but glad to be back home. So now I'm back home and my parents are here. They watched my kids while we were gone, and so now I get to spend some time with my folks until they leave back to Texas on Wednesday.
Well, that's really cool. Why you keep describing it as a work trip? That's the part that trips me out. So you like went there for work, and your wife went with you?
Put it up as like a perk of the job where, you know, so as part of my job, I work with these buying groups of customers. And so this specific buying group is a very good group where they specifically do their conferences, and they do them twice a year, and they're like location conferences. So typically every year there's one in the States and one out of the States, and one in the States and one out of the States. And so, this one was in Mackinac Island. Before that, we were in Vail. Before that, we were in Cabo. The next one we're doing is in St. Kitts. So that's kind of how, you know, that we do stuff like Aruba, Hawaii, you know, whatever the case may be. I mean, you know, nice trips. Everything is very lush, right? And so it's a buying group. We go, we spend 3 to 4 days there. And essentially, it's just a trip where we get to go and have some activities. There's always like planned activities. We stay at really nice, you know, hotels in these destination cities. Mm-hmm. And it's a relationship building trip. Like, we just get to spend some good time with our customers, do some really nice dinners, really nice activities through the day. And then we have like a day where we like do speed dating, basically, literally from like 8 to 6 o'clock. With all of our customers, and are pitching them on all new products, and all of my competitors are in the room, and they're just like going around and doing, you know, these where we have these like 20-minute segments of like speed dating where we can.
Well, I got very close to sex. I'm gonna tell you to stand down there.
Yep, easy now. 20 minutes of just like throwing as much information at them as we can and trying to like pitch them on something, right? So it's. That's kind of like the work part of, you know, we have that one day where you just like 9 to 6 o'clock, that's what you do. And the other days are, you know, just relationship building and getting to know each other a little bit, gaining some trust. And, you know, we get to have a good little trip. So obviously my wife and spouses are always invited to that. So it's not, again, it's one of those things where, like, for the most part, everyone brings their spouse. And it's just, a good trip. So it's definitely really good for spouses, because on that day where we do 9 to 6 and we work, they just have another day to like go be at the spa or, you know, whatever. Right. So,
yeah.
You know, they're twice a year I have that one as a convention, and it's pretty good. So
Yeah, this is totally foreign and alien to me. I work in government contracting world where even a $10 lunch could be seen as a bribe. And so there's like so many rules and regulation.
We pay for this, if that makes sense. Like, okay, so it's the buying group, right? They're our customers. And essentially the way it works is they put on this convention and say, hey, the convention is going to be at this X place. And for you to, you know, attend and come to this, it's going to cost you X amount. Well, that X amount divided by all of the vendors going, basically what it does is it pays for that location, for the hotel, for the activities, for all the food, pays for their members, our customers, all to come at no charge. And then we also then have to pay, you know, our flight and our hotel and our stuff, you know, to be there. So we are essentially paying the governing body of the group, if you will. But it's all it's doing is paying for the conference. It's just they make sure that the conference is at a place that is a, you know, I mean, it's a
fancy
really,
little site.
Yeah, look, and it's great. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just, it's a whole lot better and seems a lot more productive than one of these expos that you just go to like in convention center and you spend a, you know, a day there, like working all day long and you don't really get to know anybody. You don't really know, you know, build a relationship with a customer that you actually have a partnership with. And that's what this is. And it is a select group of basically like the top 50 accounts, you know, nationwide kind of thing is a really a good collection of what it kind of is. So they're all premier customers.
Very good. Well, I'm glad you had a good time this past week. I did nothing of the fancy sort, but I am about to go on my 10-year anniversary, not this coming week, but the following week. So the last week of September. Cool. So I will get, we're going to Montana. So we're going to go up to Glacier National Park. Yeah. So looking forward to that. That should be a good time. In the meantime, there's a lot of video game news to kind of break through this week. And since
I'm ready to jump into it.
But yeah, since you haven't
talk about the games you played this week, don't we?
Yeah. Let's get over there because I think there's so much to get through that maybe we just jump right in it. So you know what? Each and every week we get together to channel our virtues through the Triforce to provide you, the listener, all the hottest topics from the mythical world of video games. We also add in as much of our colorful thoughts and Philip monologues as you can handle in a week. And there's going to be a few of them this week simply because we love video games and discussing them. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing on your podcasting app of choice. And if you really enjoy, please share on social media or directly with your friends. This show continues to grow thanks to all of your wonderful support. You can find us on Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram at TriCastGamingP1. That's at TriCastGamingP1. And our website, TriCastGamingPodcast.com. DM us on any platforms with your questions, and we'd be happy to read them on the show. All right. You said you've played nothing this week, so it's going to be all me. And that's good, because I've got a lot to say. And I'm going to start with Days Gone, because that's where I have a lot to say. I finished Days Gone last weekend. I played a lot on Saturday and on Sunday. And just sort of decided to just go, make sure I got the game finished. And it got really intriguing at the end, which helped me be able to push right through to the end of the game. So I finished it. I think this time I'm going to do something a little bit different. Normally I give you all my thoughts and then I give you my score. But I think I want to start with that up front because I think that's going to surprise some people. But I'm going to give it, I have to give it like two scores, two separate scores. And that is like what this game was for me personally and what I feel like I should project it out to everybody else. And I think it'll make sense when I kind of talk through the game. But if I'm projecting it out to everyone else, I would probably give this game three tryhards. I think it is a good game. And I think it is worth your time if you can find a chance to try it out. For me, though, personally, like Philip Keeney, this is what this game was to me. I would give it five tryhards masterpiece. This game blew me away in the end. I was profoundly impacted by this game. I spent all week, literally all week, in sort of a minor depression, like sadness that I was finished the game, that I had nothing to go back to in the game anymore. And I have not felt that since gosh, it's been a long, long time since I felt that about a game. If I had played this at launch, it would have been in my top five PS4 games of the generation. I mean, it is possibly top three. It was right up there for me.
I'm quite literally shocked to hear that from you. I know I really loved this game, and it's funny because I kind of went through a lot of the same things you're talking about. Like, the story is pretty garbage until the freaking very end, and then all of a sudden I'm like, holy shit, when is number two? And then there's all this, we're not gonna have a two and all that, whatever.
Yeah,
but I loved the, like, you know, just the completion of this game and the adventure and the, like, challenge of this game. I really did like it. Like, it had a lot of that stuff which was in my top games of the generation, which was the Red Dead Redemption, right? Like, it had a lot of similar, I even, like, said, hey, it's Red Dead Redemption on a motorcycle, like, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so for sure.
I'm shocked to hear that from you, because I did love this game.
Yeah, so and actually, you know, as I think as I digested the game and as I kind of spent a lot of time thinking and grappling with it as I got to the end and then beyond the end, I think that's really grown the game for me, because I'd actually argue and say the story is not garbage, and I'll get into why I think that here in a few minutes. And by the way, this game is like 4 years old. I'm going to spoil the absolute shit out of it. We are going to talk. This is a game that both of us.
I didn't know we were or weren't, but I'm cool.
This is a game that both of us have played, and we don't get to do this very often. So I'm going to spoil the shit out of this game. Everybody be forewarned about this. I'll take note of when we finish talking about Days Gone, and I'll have Adam put it in the show notes for everybody. So if you want to skip, I'll have that postmarked for y'all. But I'm going to spoil the shit out of this game, just up front. All right, so I want to start by talking about what I disliked about the game, because I think it'll help people understand why, if I'm projecting it out, I'd probably give it a 3. There's a few things. Number one, in terms of gameplay, I do not like how scarce the crafting material got. It got to the point where I just never had what I wanted for all the different trinkets and napalm bombs and Molotovs and traps and things like that. Like, I just didn't ever have enough crafting materials. And I was feeling this towards the end of the game anyway. There is like one upgrade you can get that you grow your capacity, but it's not significant. And there's no way of just picking stuff up and it just automatically feeding into a storage box that you could go pick up from or something like that. So basically, once you're full, you're full. And if you don't use it, you don't use it. And then late in the game, you end up in a lot of situations where, so late in the game, it forces you to fight hordes. There are hordes that are not part of the quota of hordes for an area that you're forced to fight. Like, the sawmill is one of those, which actually kind of made me mad, because during the middle of the game, I decided I was going to like try to fight the sawmill. And I found a way that I was like pulling down like to the point where there was like no zombies left. But then I'd go back and they'd be all respawned in the middle. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? It's because you can't clear it before the end of the story. And it doesn't really tell you that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress on that point. But you get to the point at the end where you really are fighting a lot of hordes and a lot of large enemy groups, a lot of very powerful enemies with like armor and machine guns and stuff like that. And because throughout the whole game, you couldn't like stockpile materials, I got to the point where I was out of materials very quickly. And it honestly ruined, for me, it ruined the hordes. I felt like it made the hordes really boring at the end, because essentially I got to the point where I was like, well, there's really only one strategy here. The Chicago chopper and the RPD heavy machine gun, and I just run in circles.
Yep,
that's it.
Kite them,
and that was it. And I
never used anything. Like, I never used any of my materials for making bombs or any of that stuff except for hordes. I didn't need them for the people. Maybe that was just something that I was able to get around. So, but I did still run low on material, and I think I did a lot of like sweeping back and trying to pick up material because I needed, you know, to throw out the like distraction radios and shit to keep the freaking hordes off of me. You know what I mean? Because the hordes were, they got hard, man.
Yeah, for sure. They definitely get big in the southern zones of the game. And actually, I should say up front, I should clarify on what all I did in the game. I completed the full main story. There are four post-credits missions that I did as well, and we'll talk about those in a minute. I did all, I basically 100% did all of the zones in terms of what you can do in them, you know, ambush camps, Nero sites, you know, all of that stuff, except for the collectibles. I got enough collectibles to get all of the collectible trophies, but you don't have to get 100% collectibles to get all the trophies. And then I did all of the hordes in the northern zones, mm-hmm. and I did about half of them in the southern zones, and then I was kind of done because I kind of got bored of them. So yeah, I just want to get and I got all the trophies. I got the platinum trophy for the game. So I think I saw the game about as completely as you can see it. Yeah. so I just want to put that out there as well. But yeah, so I felt like it led to the hordes getting boring. I kind of just approached each horde the same way. Like I would kind of scout the zone and be like, okay, this is the path I'll run them through. Yep. And then I would just engage them with a couple of Molotovs and then just run, shoot, run, shoot, run, shoot, run, shoot, reload, run, shoot, run, shoot, right. reload, run, shoot, run, shoot. And it just kind of got boring at the end. And I thought that if they had allowed for, you know, more resources, allow you to go, even if you could just go buy resources at the camps or something, which would have mm-hmm. been fine. It would have made story sense if you could, or gave you a storage box where you could, you know, you could collect all through the game and then pull from it or something like that, so that I could have done more with the hordes at the end. I could have approached them differently. It would have been better. So that's one of my big dislikes. Second, from a mechanical perspective, was the selection and crafting wheel. I thought it was really clumsy and cumbersome. I can't tell you how many times I was trying to get to something and I couldn't get to it, especially in the heat of the moment. I'm not a game designer. I don't have a great alternative. Like, it is nice to have everything there, but also, like, I feel like if it was more elegant, you wouldn't have to basically stop the game once you go into the menu. You know, you could have, you know, well, I think, like, did you have something?
I was going to say is, you know, if they let you have more freaking material and hold more bombs and more, you know, ammo and more,
yeah,
then you wouldn't be constantly crafting and needing to stop mid-fight to do it. You would just,
yeah.
So there's that.
Definitely that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Horizon had like a, you press the D-pad and you kind of cycle through your stuff.
Yeah.
And then you can press up or down.
Okay. But I specifically remember still running into inventory issues with Horizon as well.
Like, sure. Yeah. It wasn't great either. I don't think that there's like a perfect way to do it. You know, Last of Us is a little bit better, but even that I felt was clunky at times. So I don't know what my suggestion would be. I just felt like that wheel and like, cause it has multiple tiers, like it blows out like two or three tiers and there's different selections at each tier. And it just, it felt like it got in the way a lot. The other thing is the D-pad, you could hold left to heal. It was like one of the only shortcuts, and it's great when you're fighting hordes and you need that, but I can't tell you how many times I'd hold it down, and as I finished healing, it just would pull up the binoculars, which was supposed to be up on the D-pad, but for whatever reason, it would just do that on me all the time on controller. I know you probably didn't have this because you played mouse and keyboard, but it was so annoying, and you can't press circle to get out of the binoculars. You have to press up on the D-pad, and I would always forget that. So I'd be in the middle of a horde trying to heal, and then the binoculars would show up, and I couldn't get out of them, and I'm like getting slapped around like a rag doll by the horde. So that was kind of annoying.
I do specifically remember, so I did play this game on mouse and keyboard, but I do remember that the mouse and keyboard control for riding on your motorcycle was wretched. I mean, it was so bad. I specifically remember playing this game with my controller beside me. And anytime I had to get onto my motorcycle, I'd pick up my controller and drive around and then set it back down and swap back over to my mouse and keyboard. Because it was bad. So bad on mouse and keyboard. It's like uncontrollable almost.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's unfortunate. I did not have that issue because I just played on right. controller. All right, the next thing I want to mention was audio issues. I think like when this game launched, there was apparently a lot of bugs and glitches. Now, the game ran perfectly well for me. It never crashed, all that kind of stuff. I didn't have any issues other than audio. Audio continuously was an issue for me. Things would talk over each other, like the Nero recorder things. They'd play through the controller, and that was like a separate audio cue than everything else.
You have a controller, speakers. Yeah. I didn't have that.
I remember at one time I had a Radio Free Oregon going on. I had the mission objective trying to speak to me, and a Nero cartel, recorder trying to play through my controller at the same time. It was garbage. Like, so I don't know what was going on. I don't know if it's how they like feed you audio as you're going. I don't know if I was doing too much quick traveling and completing things too quickly or something, and the game just couldn't keep up, but it was just not well done. So it would hurt the game at times with the audio.
I mean, you'd think they would do stuff like, for instance, I just got done playing Spider-Man, and Spider-Man would have audio going on, and then you'd get into something, and then you'd get out of that, and they would like come back, like, and it'd be like, yeah, sorry, you know, got busy for a moment there. What I was saying was, exactly. They like would try to like pick back up where it was at.
Yeah, I've seen games do that for sure.
Yeah.
They needed to do something there. Finally, the other technical issue that I found with this game was you could really tell that it began development as a PS3 game. And this it did. This game was in development for like 8 years or something when it came out in 2018. It started development on the PS3.
Yeah.
And you could really tell. This is one of those games that I feel like could really use a PS5 sort of remaster or remake, if nothing other than to just clean up the cutscenes. There was a lot of loading that had to happen. You know, this game does not engage the SSD on PS5 at all, or on PC probably.
I don't remember. So, that specific, but I'm not saying it did or didn't. That's not something that I remember.
Yeah, I mean, I ran into issues where it would literally have to stop a cutscene and to start loading the next part of the cutscene.
That definitely did not happen with me.
That happened several times.
Yeah, I remember on console. There had to be like, just like with Spider-Man, there was like a remaster for it to hit PC.
That's probably true.
I definitely did not have stops and cutscenes.
Yeah, well, playing the console version, I definitely had that, and it was really immersion breaking. At the very end, there's like a scene where they're all like, "Oh man, like Boozer didn't make it, you know, he died. Like, oh, it sucks, you know. Like, I'm sorry, everybody, he didn't make it." And then it like stops and it starts loading, and then it loads the next scene, and it's just Boozer walking out, and he's like, "Hey guys, what's up?" And I'm like, that just killed the whole scene. Like, I don't know what just happened or why they did it that way, but it's stuff like that I felt was really, really difficult to kind of get past from a technical perspective.
Yeah.
All right. So the last thing I want to say about from the dislikes, and then I'm going to get, and I feel like I've said a lot of dislikes, but I trust me, it's more like on this one. And these are going to blend together, but I want to get into the story because I think the story is difficult for a lot of people because there's a lot of tropey story beats, a lot of things I don't like in gaming, like, oh, you're starting out with your wife and she got stabbed like right away and like, oh, she's gonna get on the helicopter, bro, and like you're gonna like trust that she's gonna be okay, and then the whole story is gonna be about you trying to find her because she wasn't okay or whatever, right? You know, or the worst part, the part I really hated was when you get captured by Carlos. And you're like in this impossible situation. You're strung up and he's freaking, you know, torching your tattoos off. Like, you're fucked, right? You should be absolutely fucked. There should be no chance of you escaping. But of course, you escape, you know. And I hate when games put you into situations like that and then you just miraculously escape. So definitely a lot of story beats that were really tropey. But when I really started, and this is where I'm going to shift into the likes, when I really started diving into this game and thinking about what it was, I realized that this game is really about Deacon and his loneliness and his drive and will to continue to live in a world that just shouldn't give him any reasons to want to continue. Yeah. You know, as far as he knows, he lost his wife. His wife is dead. He tried to find her. He tried several camps to find her. There's no trace. As far as he's concerned, she's dead. And you spend he puts a rock up and he puts her name on it, basically a grave site.
Monument.
And all throughout the game, at various points, you go back to this point and you have to travel back there. You have to drive back there. There's not like a fast travel point there that you just can jump to and jump away. Like, there's a process that you as a player have to engage in to get there. And you go and you hear his monologues and you hear his pain of the loss of his wife. You know, and then eventually you get this tease, like, oh, maybe there's hope for her. And you start going down that process, and all throughout going through that process, you go back to that stone and you hear him talk and you hear the pain and the loneliness for him and him trying to find this drive and this will to live. And then, like, you think you're to this point where you're like, I'm going to find my wife. She's alive. And that's taken away middle of the game. And that's like, you can tell Deacon goes into a really dark place. It's a really tough moment for him. And they do a really good job of it, I think, in the game. And then he remembers, like, oh, there's this other thing I should look into. And the hope comes back. And eventually you do, spoiler alert, you do find your wife. And there's a whole period there where it's like these two people that were apart for 2 years and grew to be different people in this world are trying to come back and remember each other and love each other again. And that's a really interesting dynamic that happens in the game. And all throughout this, there's all these other little vignettes happening. There's the story of Boozer where he loses his arm and you having this, brotherly relationship. Basically, he's like an older brother to you, and trying to help him find his will to live and to give him hope as well. And then you've got the different characters, right? I think that's one of the places where this game really shines is its characters. You got Ricky and Addie and Iron Mike and Boozer and Sarah later on, and O'Brien. O'Brien is one of the coolest characters of this game, and we'll get into that in a little bit, but he's another character where you really feel for him. You get to the point where you kind of like and dislike him because of that relationship he has with Deacon. Mm-hmm. They do a great job with O'Brien. I think he's a wonderful character, and that's where I think this game and its story really shines is these characters and what they bring to the game and what they bring to the environment and what they bring to your moment to moment of what you're doing and why you're doing it. Carlos is another character, right? That's actually kind of a cool story where it's like one of the only people left is this dude that you like, you did some fucked up shit to him, like back when, before the world went to hell, right? Like you literally took a torch to his whole back and burned off a tattoo because he left your MC. And he's one of the guys who survives, and then he figures out that you're there, and he's got this vendetta. That's actually a pretty cool story that plays out in the middle of it, you know. And then, like, you do, I mean, like, the Rippers are weird, right? But, like, they're trying to find their place in this world. They've obviously all had mental issues themselves, and they've lost their capacity. And your solution is just fucking drown them all. It's like, I mean, you commit mass murder in the middle of the game, you know, and
I mean, they're effed up. Don't be wrong. I mean, they're basically murderers, but still, you're like, we'll kill them all. We're going to H-bomb them.
You blow up the dam and you literally drown like this entire population of people. I mean, you commit mass murder in the middle of the game. And of course they are trying to grapple with it and how fucked up that is. And, you know, it's just interesting because there's a lot of dynamic of like people trying to survive and the people that are surviving opposite to your intentions are the bad guys. But what you're doing is not that different to what they're doing, right? Yeah. it's really not.
There's a real Walking Dead type of vibe.
Exactly.
That aspect. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a little bit of survival of the fittest, you know?
So, yeah, exactly, for sure. And the last thing I'll kind of say about the story is that what I really think that it does a great job of is making you feel this passage of time. Like you go into an area and you spend time in it and you move into the next area and you spend time there and you kind of go back a little bit to the first. And eventually you reach a point where like you can't go back to those first areas anymore. You're in a next spot and you're spending time with characters there. And then you move on to another area and you can't go back. And then sometimes eventually you do go back and you see like how those people have changed and what they've dealt with in your absence, like after you left.
Yeah.
And so I think the game does a really good job of creating a sense of passage of time, a sense of experiencing life and experiencing, you know, creating memories with these different characters that they do a great job of building up in the game. And I think that's what ultimately, you know, being done with the game and not really being able to continue experiencing life with these characters anymore was what made me so sad. And I think that's what kind of really elevated this game for me in the end, was that I realized that, the sort of story beats and the scenes are really tropey, but all the, stuff in the middle, everything you do with those characters along the way is really important and really impactful. Other things I really liked about this game, the bike is dope, dude. The way that you upgrade the bike and it's your bike the whole way through, no matter what happens, you drop it in a lake, someone goes and retrieves your bike for you, right? Like, you never lose that bike. You never get another one, and you're always building on it. You're finding new parts for it. You're upgrading it. It's getting stronger and stronger throughout the game. It's looking different. It's so cool. It's so cool. And I really think that helped, again, with this feeling of progression, this feeling of time passing, this feeling of moving through this world and growing more confident and more able in this world. So the bike is so cool. Really like that aspect of it. I don't know if you wanted to say anything about the bike itself.
Like I said, I as far as like the upgrade of like its capability, you know, again, I had that like cyberpunk version where I was able to travel really, basically I had like the max capacity gas tank right off the bat. Now I got all the other things, the better tires and, all of the other upgrades slowly, but I had max gas capacity right off the bat. But I still got to like change the appearance, change the look, get all the different handlebars, get the different lights, get the different...
Add the nitrous.
Put all the different skins on the bike. I still got all of that, and I completely agree with you. It was fantastic. That's one of the things, like, you know, again, if I try to compare it to another game I love and do a Red Dead Redemption, it's basically like swapping out saddles and getting different breeds of horses. And, you know, I mean, it's sort of ish similar that way, but I think this is actually even better than the Red Dead.
Yeah. I think in direct comparison to Red Dead, it's better in that you have one bike. It is your bike. In Red Dead, you go through horses like candy, man. Like, you get different saddles and stuff, but the moment you drop a horse in front of a train, it's done. You got to get another one, right?
Right.
Your bike is your bike. That's the only one you have for the whole game, which I think is really cool. Moving on to something else that I really enjoyed was the world building. I love how... It's not like the apocalypse happened and then it's just like you're there and your story's happening. The world ending event happens, but also there's a bunch of events that happen in the world post that. And so when you come across these areas, there's like when the world ended, but there's also, you know, stuff that's happened since then, different factions that have come and gone, like the anarchists and things like that. Right. And I think that's really cool. They do a great job of just creating this amazing environment to be in. I really like that. Finally, before I get into the post-credits scene, the other thing I really want to prop up is the soundtrack. I think the soundtrack of this game is top tier. I think it is like right up there with some of the biggest movie soundtracks, like Jurassic Park, Star Wars, that kind of stuff. Like the soundtrack. Yep. The soundtrack is so good. I've listened to the soundtrack on Spotify like all week. So good. Love it. All right, let's get into the post-credit scenes and some major stories, story spoilers. So right off the bat, O'Brien, turns out he's some super infected at the end.
Yeah.
Slowly but surely, he's been evolving into this super infected person.
Yeah, well,
which is a really cool reveal.
I mean, you know, he's essentially like a zombie human hybrid.
Yeah, like he's got the strength and the movement and the agility of the zombie, but he seems to have maintained his cognitive functionality.
Right.
There's a lot of, you know, speculation that the suit, that there's some kind of chemical that's being fed to him constantly and allows him to control the virus, because he takes off the helmet and there are immediately like effects that appear that he's barely in control of the virus.
Right. He kind of has this almost like there's like this inner animal almost that comes out of him, and he almost kind of like wants to like go, like it's almost like he sees, you know, like flesh and is like food, you know what I mean? He has this like primalness to him, but then he like holds it back and but now with that being said, like essentially, but O'Brien was with other people when he said that. They just didn't take their suit off. Essentially, there's like this sect or this group of people that are this. It's not just O'Brien.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that probably all of the soldiers and all the other scientists with Nero are likely, you never see their faces.
You see the soldiers' faces? You see a bunch of the soldiers' faces.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you do. I'm trying to remember. It feels like you
I
see
thought they
their
were
faces.
All always masked.
Okay,
I mean,
maybe
at
they
least
are.
In
I'd
that last.
Go back and remember. I'd have to go back
in
and
that last scene, he's
for sure
the soldiers
are
masked.
Yeah, I can't remember about the soldiers. I can't remember.
So yeah, I mean, there's speculation that's the case, and the deeper cut that's really interesting is that there seems to be an interest in Deacon himself from Nero.
Specifically, yeah,
yes, and so you wonder because throughout the game, one of the sort of ways that you progress and grow as a character is you find these Nero sites, and when you find the Nero sites, they have these injectors, and you do the injector, and you pick like stamina, focus, or health, and that's how you kind of upgrade those. But you start to wonder at the end, like, wait a minute, what if there's something unique about Deacon and his genetics where he's taking these injectors from Nero, he doesn't have to wear the suit and get the balancing chemical, and he's actually growing stronger and stronger and stronger in some way,
right,
like the infected,
right,
without the negatives. And is that why, you know, is that why Nero is interested in him? Because he might be the genetic phenom,
right,
the exception to the absolute rule that this virus is, and maybe
right,
that's why they're so interested
in
him.
It's very much like hindsight. When you get the full picture on things, you really stop and look back and go like, okay, you were led to believe entirely from Deacon's standpoint that he was constantly reaching out to them, and that he, you know, and they were, you know, like trying to, you know, Brian was kind of appeasing him and helping him, and that mm-hmm. constantly Deacon was the one who was initiating the contact. And then you get the whole like story and whole effect, and you realize that they knew they had something Deacon wanted and needed, and they constantly almost used him and drew him
yeah.
out to specific things and maintained contact. And they could have just given him everything that he wanted right off the bat, but they like slowly rolled it out to him so that he would
for
do
sure.
things that they wanted, and they could observe and watch and, you know, and,
yeah.
and have him complete tasks for them, etc. And you're just like, holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah. There's
and like you said, for him
layer.
To be taking all of this Nero stuff, like it's Nero, all of Nero exists because Nero essentially is the zombie. Like, so you're just like, he's taking their serum. Like, holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's really interesting. Obviously, that's probably where the second game would have focused if there had mm-hmm. been a sequel. Maybe the show will expand on that.
Right.
I've thought about this deeply since, and I think for me, I'm kind of glad that there's just one game. Maybe there will be a sequel sometime in the future, but
who knows? I see. I'm one of those that like some people really like a movie that like ends and like leaves it up to question because, you know, like,
yeah.
you know, some people are like, okay, did he live or did he die? Or, you know, I mean, like the end of Inception, right?
Right?
Like some people love that because then they can
yeah.
make their own, what makes sense to them, or they can, you know, mm-hmm. I can't stand it because I need closure on things. Like I can't
yeah.
stand it. So I don't know.
I think I often like that, but I think in this instance, I feel that I lived something with all of these characters, and I kind of just want to keep my version of it, you know. Like I don't want someone else deciding for me what happened. So anyway, that I have talked for almost 30 minutes about Days Gone. You can tell that this game really impacted me. I really loved it. You can hopefully understand, audience, and see why if I'm projecting to other people, I might give it a 3. But if for me personally, it was a 5. I love this game on a very, very deep level.
I gave it a 4, and I loved it on a 5 level. Yeah.
Yeah. Great, great game. All right. I played some Rocket League, Destiny. I'm not going to say anything more about those. Everybody knows I'm still playing Pokemon Shield, making my way through that. I'm not going to expand any more on that. But I do want to say I ended up buying Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. And that is what I've been kind of playing as a sort of a detox from Days Gone since then. The first thing I did was I went in there and I was like, is there a field of view slider? There is. Thank God. Immediately crank that all the way to 110 degrees, which was max.
Yep.
Game changer. total game changer. It went from like, this game doesn't feel great or feel fun to play to I'm having a blast with this thing. So it's mindless fun. It's, there's nothing deep here. If you played a Borderlands, it's the same, except the story is fed through a like a D&D RPG type level, which it makes it interesting because like random shit happens all the time and it's pretty fun. The overworld map is pretty neat. You kind of walk through and it's like a D&D board with like popcorn and cheese puffs spread out through this like castles and stuff like that that you're walking through, which is kind of funny to see. I don't know. Whenever I finish this, I'll give you guys a sort of deeper look at it, but I am playing Tiny Tina's Wonderlands.
Cool.
Having some fun with that. All right, let's jump into the news because we got a lot of it to go through. I basically cut out the news speed run because I think we basically have six main topics to talk through here. And so let's just start breaking them down. First up on this list is the PlayStation State of Play, which took place early in the week. I think it was the first thing that happened. It happened on Tuesday of this past week, about a 20-minute show. Pretty tight, good show. A lot of interesting announcements, very Japanese focused, with a weird out of place God of War trailer at the end. I'm going to kind of give you my like grading for it, and then I'll get yours, and then we'll kind of talk a little bit more if there's anything you want to talk about in particular. I have a couple games I want to mention out of it. But I would say that this is a low B for me. I think that it was a pretty good show. There were some entertaining games. It was paced really well. I don't know that anything jumps out like, oh man, I want to play this desperately now. But I think it was a solid show. It had a lot of gameplay in it, which is really important. Gameplay is king in these things. And yeah, I think it was like a low B. What about for you?
I struggled a lot with this because, you know, again, all of these game shows were the Tokyo game shows, right? So it's all Tokyo stuff. It's very Japan type focused, right? Mm-hmm. And I struggle with that. So it was tough for me to follow and be excited for a lot. There were just a couple small things that I liked from the PlayStation State of Play. So for me, I'm going to say C, but that's just my personal like. I mean, it was probably B level as far as its quality. It's mm-hmm. on the C for what I got out of it. For instance, one of the things, you know, we had the whole Hogwarts Legacy thing. I struggle with Hogwarts because, I've watched a little video trailer kind of, a recap of the show. And I agree entirely with what he said, which was basically like, look, we keep being told like how big Hogwarts Legacy is and how it's this huge RPG. And we are not like every freaking trailer we've seen is the same damn freaking little tidbit of info. If it was so dang big, why aren't we seeing more? And it just feels real like tuned in on stuff. And this mm-hmm. entire thing was basically built around the exclusive like quest that you're going to have with PlayStation. But it still looked like the same kind of content we've seen over and over. Like, so I just...
For sure.
I don't know. So there's that part, right? Like, okay, cool, more Hogwarts stuff. But it didn't really feel like I got anything more out of the Hogwarts Legacy stuff than we've already seen.
Yeah, I think if I was to address Hogwarts real quick, it's the thing that I don't know what the moment-to-moment gameplay looks like for this.
Right.
We've seen gameplay trailers, right? But what do you do from moment to moment in this game? Like, is it an open world?
Right.
I don't know. Is it you go to class and then you go to another class and then you throw some spells around? Like, is it crafting? Is it an RPG? Like, is there decisions you make? Like, I don't know what that is for the game. And I felt it was really interesting because they mentioned that there would be an exclusive dungeon is what they referred to it as.
Yeah.
For the game, and it made me go, huh, I wonder if this game is kind of like a Persona MMO game.
Oh, okay.
like a persona, because in Persona, like you go to class during the day and you do classes and you actually like have interactions with people and you make choices. And then at night you go into these dungeons and you fight all of these characters and stuff like that at night.
I could see that work for this.
I think it could too. It could be really interesting, but we don't know. We don't know what it is. And that I agree with you. We it's hard to get excited about Hogwarts because we don't know what we're going to do
and that's
as we play the game.
Yeah.
Okay. Was there any game that kind of, was there any game that was like, that's a game that I might check out, or was it all just,
I mean, I don't have a PlayStation. I'm not looking to be getting a PlayStation anytime soon. I mean, just reality of it, but something that at least I looked at and was like, okay, that looks cool. And you know, I do like that was the Star Wars VR game.
Okay.
That part I was I think that's cool.
I want to run through these real quick. I'm just going to kind of go, there's not much here and I'm going to be pretty quick. So I'm going to kind of go game by game because I think that there's a misperception that a lot of this is PlayStation focused. So well, they led off with Tekken 8. There was no release date announced. This is coming from Bandai Namco. This is not a PS5 exclusive. In press releases afterwards, Xbox Series releases, PC release, PlayStation 5 release, all simultaneous. This is coming across all three of those platforms. I did find a really interesting little tidbit that I didn't realize. So this is a sequel to Tekken 7. Tekken 7 was released exclusively in arcades in 2015 and didn't come to consoles until 2017, where it went on to sell 9 million copies. So Tekken 7 was really proper.
I played a ton of Tekken.
Yeah. Okay. So it's really popular. So this was a big trailer to lead off of the show. Then there was two games from PSVR 2 that were showed. But both of these, I think, is really key to say that they are already existing games. You can get those on Oculus Quest right now today. Star Wars Tales from the Galaxy's Edge. This was released back in November of 2020, and it's cost $24.99 on the Oculus Store. It's got a 4-star rating. There's also like a DLC add-on to it that's like $9.99. So presumably, because they call this like the enhanced edition, so presumably this will include all of that in that.
Right.
Interestingly, they said it's going to be a 2023 release. I think we've kind of already known that, but it's just sort of verifying that 2023 we are going to get PSVR 2.
Yeah.
That hardware is going to launch next year. The second game, Demio, is very popular, I've heard. This is also available on Oculus Quest right now, $29.99. You can get it. It came out in May of last year, and it's got like a near 5-star rating on Oculus Quest. Very popular game. Interesting, like D&D dungeon crawling card game type thing. Next up was Like a Dragon Isshin. This has got a February 21 of next year release date. This was actually originally released in 2014 in Japan only, and they've kind of remastered it and are now bringing it to the West for the first time. This is another one that's going to come to PlayStation, Xbox, PC, all of those day and date when it releases. It's a multi-platform title. Then we got the Hogwarts Legacy stuff. They basically highlighted the PS exclusive stuff that we already mentioned. Then the next game, which I thought was really interesting, was Pacific Drive.
I just don't know what to think on this one. That was my biggest thing. Concept, I'm like, okay, maybe, but I just don't know, based off the trailer, really what it is just yet.
Yeah, so the trailer's really neat. Post-apocalyptic world where you're in this like exclusion zone in the Northwest and you're trying to escape. The press releases afterwards described this as a run-based first-person driving survival game, calling it a, quote, road-like. So this is a roguelike game where you're driving and trying to get further along. You'll eventually die. You'll upgrade your car. You go back to the shop, upgrade your car, and try again until you finally escape this exclusion zone. I don't know that there's anything else like that out there, anything that's done that. So
it's unique.
Definitely interesting premise. Then they talked about PlayStation Stars, which I think is, I am not interested in at all.
I agree. Oh my goodness. I'm glad you have that take because holy crap, I don't care.
Yeah. The other thing was that it's all app based for now. So you have to go into the PlayStation app when it launches to do this stuff. It's not even on your console. I don't know.
It's literally just PlayStation trophies, but now the trophies are like they look like objects.
Digital goods.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah, weird stuff. Not sure. I'll wait and see when it comes out, but I was not impressed.
Yeah.
Then the next game was Thin Duality, another Bandai Namco game coming next year. This is another game, in press releases afterwards, they noted that this is coming PS5, Series X, and PC at launch. It's a multi-platform game at launch. Sci-fi third-person shooter with mechs. Interestingly, they noted that it's PvPvE. So when you go on your runs, there will be, you know, obviously AI-controlled characters, but also other player characters could be in your environments, and you could end up in PvP with other players. So neat little mech game that was shown there. Again, nothing so far jumped to me. It was like, oh, I want to play that. There really wasn't anything to that. And then finally, we get to the three PS5 exclusive games. You had Stellar Blade, which is coming from Shift Up Corporation next year. This was actually originally announced last year in a state of play. And this one is going to be published by Sony Interactive Entertainment. So this is like a publishing partnership for Sony. And then finally, Rise of the Ronin. This is another game from Team Ninja. They did like the Neo series, Ninja Gaiden, Strangers of Paradise. They've also got a game coming out early next year called Wolong Dynasty or something like that. I don't remember what it's called. Wolong Fallen Dynasty is what it's called. So they're really busy. Rise of the Ronin was the first game that I was like, I might be interested in this. But I know that their games are typically more like Souls-like games, and so that's probably going to push me away from it. And then last but not least, we got that Out of Place God of War trailer, which, you know, I really like God of War. I'm excited for God of War, but I don't really need to see any more of it. Yeah. So that's what we got. But well, there's,
and they announced a God of War specific controller, which again, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Not really too crazy for. Yep. But yeah, I just kind of wanted to point that out there, is that there is a lot of multi-platform stuff in here.
Yeah.
So go check some of that out if you're interested in any of those. I don't think I got anything else to say about the state of play. All right. Next up, we had Nintendo Direct. That was the next thing that happened. I think it happened on Wednesday.
And if I thought the other one was super Japanese, holy shit.
Oh my God. Dude,
and I said, hold my beer. Hold my sake.
And like, dude, they must have had like 50 games.
Yeah.
Maybe. There were so many games. It was like a 40-minute show. It was like game after game after game after game. And every one of, like, there must have been 5 farming simulators in this show. And I'm not even kidding you. I'm pretty sure there were 5 different farming simulators shown in this game.
Yeah.
Gosh,
farming,
dude,
is a big thing in Japan, man. Okay, they really like farming.
So many Japanese games in here, and then the one thing that might be like really interesting to the West, the Breath of the Wild announcement, was like a 2-minute tease that didn't even still show gameplay for that thing.
Yep.
All it did was title it Tears of the Kingdom.
I mean, they had some things like, you know, look, obviously we both agree It Takes Two is a great game. It's finally coming to Switch. You know, you had some things like that. Okay, cool. Maybe this whole, you know, SpongeBob SquarePants, the Cosmic Shake game, you know, like,
yeah. And that's going to be a multi-platform as well. So that's Switch, PS4, Xbox One,
Tunic. You really love Tunic. They're getting Tunic now. They had another trailer for, Splatoon 3. Let's see here.
Which is already out, actually. So this is just kind of, that was another weird thing. This is like announcing our first post-launch community event in our Nintendo Direct. Like, I don't think that needed to be there.
The Mario Rabbids, like, my kids both love Mario and Rabbids. Like, so.
Yeah, yeah. And now we saw that. We saw a deep dive. So I guess technically the first show was the Ubisoft show, and we haven't talked about it yet.
Yeah.
But there was a deep dive for the Mario Rabbids in the Ubisoft show.
Yeah.
Octopath Traveler 2 was a big announcement from Square Enix. Although, again, that's like a Japanese RPG that I'm not really too interested in. The 007 GoldenEye, did that jump out to you?
I mean, I liked that part, but again, you know, I won't ever play it on Nintendo Switch. You know what I mean? Like, I'll just play the Xbox versions, etc.
Yep.
Other than this will have multiplayer and the others won't, apparently.
Yeah.
That part's dumb. But I guess I kind of am stopping and going like, but would I really ever play GoldenEye multiplayer? Do I care that much?
No.
You know what I mean? It's not like it's multiplayer like what what today's multiplayer. Back then, it was amazing multiplayer.
Yeah.
But now, I'm like, I think I would just nostalgia go back through and play the missions. Like, so I don't think I do care that much.
Yeah, all I would care about is, like, the four-player local multiplayer, like, as a party gimmick one night when we all hung out or something.
Yeah, that's exactly. It. Nostalgia, like, good time back in the day kind of thing. Cool.
Yep. Story of Seasons, Fae Farm. Like Harvestella,
final bar line. Like
that was so funny. It's like a Guitar Hero, but just for Final Fantasy songs.
Yes.
Like, God bless. I don't know what to say about that. Factorio coming to Switch. I know Mike loves Factorio.
Yep. I own it. You know, meh. There was one thing of bad news, I guess. There was a delay. What was that?
For
they announced the delay for the Nintendo Switch Sports Golf.
Oh yes. Well, it's still coming holiday of this year, but a little later than anticipated. Wave 3 of Mario Kart 8 expansion. They showed that off. They announced Pikmin 4, which for those of us with kids, Pikmin 4 and Kirby's Return to Dream Land Deluxe. For those of us with kids, those are good announcements, but not my kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Not that interested in it. Let's see. The Resident Evil games are coming via cloud. So Village, RE2, RE3, and RE7 are all coming through cloud. Geez, man. It just... Oh, there was one thing I was actually interested in here. Crisis Core Reunion. They dated it on this show. So Crisis Core Reunion is coming to PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch, but they dated it in this Nintendo Direct for December 13 of this year. That is actually something I'm looking forward to. So they've redone Crisis Core in the same way that they did the Final Fantasy VII Remake, so with the third-person action combat. So I'm looking forward to jumping in and playing that at the end of the year. So that was good. That was one thing that I liked from the show. Apart from that, that's it. I mean, it was a whole lot of show and was still a whole lot of nothing for me.
Yep.
I mean... Switch players there's a lot coming out for you guys. Y'all are eating good, but this is not pulling me back to my Switch. None of this, for sure. All right. What do I have next? Do I have the Xbox show?
I have the Xbox show next. And as the Xbox pro guy on here, I'll say this was the worst effing show of all of them. Holy hell, there was nothing here. I don't care about any of it.
Yeah.
I can't even watch most of it because it's all in freaking Japanese.
Yeah, there's subtitles, man. You can read. What I will say about the show, I want to say two things. One, I think that it was well done in terms of blending, you know, game announcements and trailers with having some people talk, some devs talk, without it being too long-winded. So we have like. We have the state of play where there's nobody coming out in that show. It's just trailer, done. Don't take too much of your time. Then we have the Ubisoft show, which we'll get to in a minute, where it was an hour and a half long and a lot of wasted talking.
Yeah.
And then right in the middle, we had this one where I felt like it was the good balance of hearing from some of the devs, which personalizes them and brings them to the gamers while also showing a lot of trailers and gameplay and also not taking too long at 40 minutes for the show. The second thing I want to say is that I said way, way back on this show when Xbox Series X was launching that one of the things I felt like Xbox needed to do was really engage with Japan and Japanese gamers.
Yeah.
And this is their big, big coming out party. I mean, all of these games are available elsewhere already, almost all of these, I think, but it's Blaze Blue, Game Pass, Guilty Gear Strive, Game Pass, Ni No Kuni, Game Pass, Danganronpa V3, Game Pass, Dyson Sphere Program, Game Pass, Fuga, Game Pass. Like, it is, here's all the games that you like. Oh, Persona 5 as well. I didn't mention that one. Game Pass. Here's all these big, massive Japanese titles.
That's loot.
Game Pass.
Game Pass.
Yeah. So go buy a Series S for $300, get a Game Pass subscription, and you've got all of your games, boom, right there. Yeah. And I think
I did see that. I guess I just, again, from my perspective, as an American gamer, this show didn't really do much for me. I get that their goal here, and this was a Tokyo Games showcase for Japan. This was probably really good for Xbox, right?
Yes, absolutely. But
for me, as an American, I'm like, oh my gosh, who cares? You know?
Yeah, 100%. There is a couple things for the Western gamer. Assassin's Creed Odyssey is now available in Game Pass. That was announced at that show. And Deathloop coming September 20th, finally, to Xbox consoles and coming to Game Pass. So those were two big announcements that Western gamers are probably interested in. But otherwise, yeah, not a whole lot here. Again, there's a lot of multiplat stuff. I mean, I think
There was a Forza Horizon 5 10-year anniversary update. It's coming October 11th that was announced.
That's true. Yep, you're absolutely right. That's another thing that was announced here. But yeah, apart from like the Forza Horizon 5, almost everything here is multi-platform. So, you know, go check out some of that stuff. You know, if you're interested in Wolong Fallen Dynasty, there was another bit here. That's going to be on PlayStation consoles. If you're interested in Exo Primal, that was shown off here. That's also going to be on PlayStation consoles and PC. So, you know, there's a lot of multi-platform stuff. So if any of these games are interesting to you as multi-platform gamers, if you're not an Xbox gamer, there's still a lot of stuff here to go check out. I like to bring that up because I feel like people get like zeroed in on, oh, this was a PlayStation show, so I shouldn't look at it because I'm an Xbox gamer. Except 80% of it was multi-platform and will come to Xbox as well.
Right.
And the same here. So I like to call that out for people so that
they're kind of... Yeah, that's a really good point. Yep, good.
Other than that, not much here to say other than I wanted to highlight this PAL World game, PAL World. I encourage people to go take the 2 minutes to watch the trailer because this thing is one of the wildest things I've seen. It's basically a Pokemon game. You have Pokemon. You're trying to capture them. But the Pokemon wield guns. When they go into battles, these things have like machine guns and rocket launchers and shit. It is the weirdest looking thing I have seen in a long time. I am not interested in it in any way. But when I saw that trailer, I was like, what the fuck is happening here? So yeah, I encourage everyone to go check that out because it's bananas. Crazy concept for a game. All right. Finally, the last show, I guess it was technically the first show of the week, but it's the last show that we're going to talk about, the Ubisoft Forward. Jason, where are you at with this thing?
You know, so there were a couple of things. I kind of go back and forth on a couple of things. One, again, I'm back to definitely way too long of a show. Way too long of a show. And I go back to, okay, this was definitely more of a Western, you know, showcase, right? Everything on here felt like this is definitely not Japanese focused. This is all stuff that should be, you know, things that we would be excited about, right?
For sure.
But at the same time, like, okay, Skull and Crossbones, or Skull and Bones, I mean. I still don't really know what the gameplay is. I still don't really understand fully, like, what all you do in it, right? Like, I'm a little concerned about some stuff. Like, you know, I mean, there's parts of it where I'm like, okay, you know, even with, my brain has just stopped working. The Xbox game that is a pirate game. Why can't I? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you're thinking of the Rare game.
Yes, that Mike plays.
Wow,
I play it too. Anyway,
Keep talking. I'll find the name. Yeah, it's totally lost from me.
Okay, so like you know, you get on shore and you can jump out of your boat and you control a person on a boat and you control sails and you turn the. This is like you're a captain and you can design your boat. Basically, it's just like how you can design your boat. But there's a crew, like, okay, I guess I control the crew, but I don't. But do I ever get off the boat?
Yeah, I think there is some.
On the boat? Do you control multiple boats? Like, I don't really know a whole lot about, like, then there's times where I'm like, okay, I used to love, it's an old school game, and I would play it just because it would be something that would have some nostalgia for me. But there was an old school pirate game called Sid Meier's Pirates, right? Like, and you essentially controlled bird's eye view of a pirate boat and would fight other pirates and then get their loot. And I'm like, is this just more of a 3D version of that? Like, at some point, like, I start to kind of feel like that might be more of what it is. Like, I'm interested, but I just still have so many questions. And this thing freaking launches in November. And I don't know anything about it almost, right? Like, so there's just, that part's a bit weird for me. Then there is, you know, we had even talked.
Before you go on, so Sea of Thieves is the game that we're trying to think
of. Holy crap. Yes,
Sea of Thieves. And I agree with you about Skull and Bones. I think that it's going to be way, way, way more focused on ship-to-ship combat. I don't think that you're going to just be able to stop at an island and jump off and go run into it like you can in Sea of Thieves.
Yeah.
But I do think that there will be off-ship stuff at like your hub where you go and turn in bounties or and you
admire upgrade your ship. Stuff too, the Pirates game. I it just feels more like a 3D version of Sid Meier's Pirates is what I think it may be, which I'm not sure I'm interested in or not. I don't know on this game.
I can tell you 100%. This is not a game for me. I'm not looking forward to it.
I hope it does well, but that was a long time ago too.
Yeah. I mean, I hope it does well for them, but I can tell you right off the bat, it's not doing anything for me.
And the graphics didn't look great either, man. You know what I mean? The graphics really did not look very good. I was kind of like,
I agree with you. I thought
when they show off the armors and stuff they're putting on, I'm like, that kind of looks like shit. Like, look.
I mean, there were
different cannons. Really? That's the different cannons you have? Like, really?
Yeah. Not great. I will say though that like there were times with the God of War Ragnarok trailer where I was like, I don't know that this is that graphically impressive. So it may have just been like compression of YouTube videos or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, I was struggling with it too. But what were you wanting to move on to after Skull and Bones?
So I was going to go to, you know, I really like The Division, right?
Yes.
So they talked about some new stuff with The Division. That didn't really catch my interest that much because to me, The Division 2 is dead. They need to move on from it. There needs to be a Division 3. There's not, at this point, not anything new they can add to that that would bring me back, right?
Yeah, they're on year 5 of this game. But season 10 and season 11 next in the show.
But they're just rewashing shit. I mean, they're just literally rewashing. So I don't care. But then they were like, our first look at the new free-to-play game, Division Heartland. And I watched the trailer and I'm like, I don't know what it... But I watched the trailer and there's gameplay sort of. I just still don't know if I know what the game is.
Yeah, how is this different from how you're supporting Division 2 right now?
Yeah, I don't know. It feels a little weird, and it's also weird to me because, you know, they still did not give a release date for this game, and technically this game had a release date of last year.
Yeah.
And yeah, they just stopped talking about it. Like, it just went away, and it's almost like it got removed. Like, it got hard to find anything about it. They just stopped talking about it altogether. And now it's all of a sudden, it's like, oh, back to let's talk about it. No release date in sight, though. Like, I don't understand what's going on with this game. And based off the trailer, I have no idea really. Because they say stuff like it's a survival game. And I'm watching on the screen and there is a HUD. And I can see the HUD. But I see nothing on the HUD that says survival to me. Like, I don't see, like, food or water or like I don't see things that are keeping them or surviving. So I'm a little kind of like, it just feels here's what it sort of looks like to me. It almost sort of looks like it's Ubisoft's version of State of Decay. That's what it kind of started to feel like. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. That's like the way they kind of talked about stuff. I'm like, this just feels sort of State of Decay with the Division storyline. That's really what I feel like it's going toward. I don't know if you see that, but that's the way it feels to me.
Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that. I mean, It's not a game that really jumped to me. Yeah. I wasn't, you know, thrilled by it. I'm trying to move forward in the trailer to kind of look at it a little bit. But yeah, I'm not sure, like you said, I'm not sure what it is supposed to be. And how it differs from The Division 2, other than being a different setting. You know, you're in the heartland of America. You know, I don't know where. You know, like Iowa, Missouri, somewhere in there.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm struggling as well with what this game is and how it will play. You know, and then of course it's free to play. So how are they monetizing it? Right. What are the aspects of it from that perspective? And how does it how is it going to stand out and stand up in that regard?
Which now I'm sorry, now I have to jump back because we're talking about monetizing, which I'm sure you saw too in Skull and Crossbones. Like, you know, they have the trailer that also has a spot where basically one of the developers comes in and talks and does like a trailer breakdown and like pauses the video and then talks for moments. And multiple times in it, she says things like, you know, and we'll have these, you know, aesthetics in the game that you can, you know, collect, or, you know, you can, some of them you can collect as you progress the story. And then there are some that you can, you know, others you will get via our online shop, online store or whatever. And I'm like,
oh yeah, they're gonna sell it.
Like,
yeah, they're gonna sell all kinds of stuff there.
If it turns into, you know, like some of this stuff, like with the PlayStation Gran Turismo, where it's so outlandish, or it's a Diablo Immortal, like it's so crazy expensive to get some of these things, where it's like you can earn them with in game, sure, totally, yeah, with, you know, 600 hours of playtime, you sure can, or spend $9.99 and you can just get it now. Like, I'll be interested to see how that works, because they made that comment multiple times and I'm like, that's a little worrisome to me. But
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what the Division's monetization is going to be for that either.
They also had another mobile game, which they went hard on the mobile. There's like a whole Rainbow Six Siege mobile game that they talked about here.
Yeah.
A Division mobile game. I think it was called Resurgence. And then there's an Assassin's Creed mobile game as well later on.
Yeah.
So they're going hard on the mobile games as well from the show.
I guess I didn't catch the Assassin's Creed mobile game. Is that the Hex one?
No.
Okay. I was going to speak to Hex as... what the hell is that? Because they gave us this 30-second trailer that was literally a picture of a tree and like a leaf falling off of it, and that's literally it. Like, it's the most ridiculous, or a feather or something. I can't remember exactly. It's just like, you might as well just have given me a poster that said Assassin's Creed Hex. I got nothing from it. Why did we even have that trailer? Why did it exist? Why?
It's definitely a tease. I think if you're an Assassin's Creed player, there's hints in here what this game probably is.
Did you get some of those hints?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, because I'm like, Okay.
Yeah, I think if you go to Reddit, there's probably a lot of deep dives there.
Well, good for you guys, because I got nothing out of the damn thing.
I think it's definitely a tease for Assassin's Creed players that are really into the series, but that's like their long way. I want to talk about Assassin's Creed in a little bit. Let's kind of the mobile game that was mentioned there was called, I'm looking it up right now. So they oh crap, what is it called? Give me 2 seconds here. And I will have the name for you. I'm just a little bit slow here. But yeah, they definitely had a mobile game, and they were saying it's like an open world mobile game that you go and play, which is pretty wild. I think it was called Codename Jade is what it was titled.
Okay, I didn't see that. I missed that somehow.
Yep. So, yeah, they went hard on the mobile games in this show.
Again, it was only a four-day-long show, so I missed long, something in it. Holy hell.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, is it time to jump to Assassin's Creed, or was there anything else?
I don't see anything. I mean, look, they had some stuff that, again, I just don't care about. Just Dance and, you know, Trackmania and whatever. But
Mario plus Rabbids deep dive in there.
Yeah, BMX, you know, stuff. Nothing that just screamed to me like crazy. So then all the next big news on this thing was the like multiple variants of Assassin's Creed news they had here, which, you know, maybe you're better to speak to this stuff than me, because all I had on this was, you know, the hex thing that I got nothing out of it. Like outside that, it was just, there was nothing necessarily here specific that leaped out to me as crazy cool or that I was like pumped about.
Yeah. So I'm about to talk, but I linked in the chat the Codename Jade trailer, so that you can see if you recognize it now. But yeah, so what was neat was they had a Ubisoft board, and then the last like 25 to 30 minutes was dedicated to a specific Assassin's Creed showcase that was all about Assassin's Creed. And I have a lot of thoughts here, because in some ways, I was really excited. The reveal of Mirage and what that game is and how they're really trying to build a game very similar to the original first Assassin's Creed has me really excited. I stated on the show that some of the aspects of the Valhalla DLC that I really liked was that the game was going back to its roots in having targets that you're stalking, and that being the main vibe of what the game is, and the story of taking out these targets as you get progressively towards the leader of whatever group that you're trying to go after.
Yeah.
They did that with Siege of Paris, and I thought that was really cool. And they're looking to build a whole game around that. The character you're playing as, Basim, is a character from Valhalla. So this is really interesting. And then they had the actress that's going to play his mentor in the game is Agdashlu, is the lady's name, her last name, but she's in the Expanse, and I love her. I think she's an amazing actress. I think she's going to do a really good job for this game. So that's really cool to see. I was stoked with the Mirage reveal. I'm really, really excited. This is one of the games that I'm looking forward to the most for next year, like right away up to the top. But then that said, they keep going and going with the Assassin's Creed stuff. So it was like a few years ago, it was like, oh, we realized that releasing a new Assassin's Creed every year is probably market saturation for the franchise, and we need to take a step back, and we need to build these bigger games, and we need to do more distance between releases. And then here they're like, oh, never mind, let's just announce 5 Assassin's Creed games. which is what they did, because there's Mirage, and Mirage is coming next year.
By the way, we're also doing a TV show in the middle of all this shit.
Exactly. So there's Mirage, which is coming next year. Before that, there is one final piece of DLC for Valhalla coming later this year. Mm-hmm. Then Mirage coming next year. Then the next game is Codename Red, which is intriguing. They're finally going to feudal Japan setting. That could be good. Then the next one is going to be called Codename Hexe, like you pointed out. And then there's the mobile game that they announced, and then the Netflix TV series partnership, which is okay. Just so much Assassin's Creed.
So time out 2 seconds. There's also this whole Infinity thing, which I tried to follow and don't follow. So maybe you can explain that to me. And then so catch me up a little bit here. Assassin's Creed. Because again, I'm one of those that the last Assassin's Creed I really played was Black Flag. Loved Black Flag, haven't played since. So, I don't know if it was Valhalla or which one, but wasn't they? I know in the news we talked about how they had an expansion they were working on for one of them, and then they up and decided, nope, we're going to make this its own standalone game instead of just an expansion. Is that one Mirage. Of these?
That's Mirage.
Okay. I was about to say, is that Mirage. One of these, or is that also another thing that didn't even get mentioned here? No.
That is Mirage that you're thinking about. That's the one. Like I said, Basim is a character from Valhalla.
Yep.
Many were speculating that would be the last DLC, and it would focus on Basim. Sorry.
Yes.
But they've broken it out and made its own game. So the Infinity thing, I think a lot of us are still unsure what that is. They kind of suggested it's maybe like a some kind of, whether it's you get an account in that and it's tied to all of your Assassin's Creed games. Maybe there's an app that you can go
that's
to.
That's what I was trying to figure. Is it like an app?
Maybe it's a launcher on PC or something. It is not a game. Infinity is not a separate game.
I was trying to figure out if it was a launcher or an app. I couldn't tell.
Yeah. I think it's something like that. Now, they threw a lot of games at us, but what I think is interesting is they talked about understanding that there are different verticals of Assassin's Creed games, and maybe that's what's going on here, is that they're trying to appease the different sections of fans, like ones that want tighter, more story-driven experiences and ones that want the bigger open-world RPGs. And so if that's what they're doing and they're kind of giving us a selection of Assassin's Creed games, I could be okay with that too. Maybe Codename Red is their next big open-world RPG and Codename Hexae is their next more story-driven, focused game like Mirage coming down the road. Who knows? We didn't see gameplay of Red. We definitely didn't see gameplay of Hexae. There's a lot still to know about those two. What we do know right in front of us is final DLC for Valhalla Mirage next year and plenty more Assassin's Creed following that. Yep. I think that's what we know. Okay, I think that's a lot, and I think it's time to move on. I think we've covered those shows in, as extensively as we can. We got a mini E3 here in the fall of this year, and I think we've done a good job covering that. So let's get on into number 5. We have our next episode in the long running soap opera that is this Microsoft AKB acquisition and Sony's interest in it. So let's read out some stuff and then we'll dive into this. So the UK competition regulators investigation into Microsoft's proposed acquisition of Activision Blizzard has officially been expanded to a second phase. Last week, we discussed on the show how the Competition and Markets Authority, CMA, said its inquiry into the $68.7 billion merger could be referred for a, quote, in-depth investigation, end quote, due to a number of antitrust concerns with the CMA, saying it was worried about the impact the deal could have on PlayStation's ability to compete. The CMA offered Microsoft the chance to submit proposals addressing its concerns, but Microsoft itself said on Thursday that the company had chosen not to do so at this stage.
No thanks.
Yeah, unsurprisingly, I think they assessed that there was nothing they could add at this point that would stop the second phase anyway, so they just allowed it to proceed. Therefore, phase two of the CMA's investigation has seen it appoint an independent panel to scrutinize the deal in further detail and evaluate if it's more likely than not to result in a substantial lessening of competition. It's unclear how long this next phase will take to complete.
So
this is where
could I just jump in 1 second and say that I don't know who wrote this specifically, article wise or who's but the like wording of this triggered me, where it says therefore fate and if this is your writing, that's fine. I'm just saying, like, I don't know if this came specific, like a quote from someone or what, but where it says that phase two of the CMEs has sent and to an appoint an independent panel to scrutinize the deal further. It immediately just screamed to me like, find more shit we don't like about it rather than just investigate it and, come to a conclusion. It was scrutinize it. Like, to me, it was like,
sure.
Like, I don't know. I immediately became triggered. Like, it was just like, it's
yeah,
like,
I mean,
it's
this
like
is my writing.
I just this read it immediately as like a, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I view the word scrutinize. Yeah, I see how you got there. I guess I just was looking for a word to investigate would have been the less aggressive word.
Yeah, I went full aggressive on it. And I'm like, ah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, and we're going to get into this in a second, but I think this could potentially be bad for PlayStation, because obviously when they go and they look into this deal further, they could potentially find that no, PlayStation is the one that's anti-competitive. And actually, let's approve this Microsoft purchase because, and we'll get into it, but this is not meant to be a find more reasons to disqualify Microsoft. This is meant to be the CMA recognized that it's not qualified enough to evaluate it at a deeper level.
So they're getting a third party.
Yep, exactly. And so this is where it gets really interesting, because both Sony and Microsoft responded. First from Sony, here is the quote, and I read verbatim from them. By giving Microsoft control of Activision games like Call of Duty, this deal would have major negative implications for gamers and the future of the gaming industry. We want to guarantee PlayStation gamers continue to have the highest quality gaming experience, and we appreciate the CMA's focus on protecting gamers. I want to break down this quote in a second, but first I want to just read briefly Microsoft's response, because it was very brief. Quote, it makes zero sense for Microsoft to remove Call of Duty from PlayStation, given its market-leading console position, end quote. That's it. That was all that Microsoft responded with. Let's break down this quote from PlayStation, because they talk about major negative implications for gamers. Okay, and now one could say, well, maybe they meant PlayStation gamers, but no, in the very next sentence, they talk about PlayStation gamers specifically. So they believe, or are trying to make everyone else believe, that Microsoft buying Activision Blizzard will have major negative implications for gamers as a whole, plural, everyone. Then they go on to say that we want to guarantee PlayStation gamers continue to have the highest quality gaming experience. Well, yeah, you should. You are Sony PlayStation. That is should be your focus. Fair enough. But then immediately say, and we appreciate the CMA's focus on protecting gamers. They go back to the generalistic term gamers.
Yeah, they're speaking out of like both sides of their mouth.
Yeah, very interesting. And I think this is actually a super weird play for Sony to make it like this. Major negative implications for gamers as a whole. Let's think about who could possibly be affected by this. Call of Duty seems to be the centerpiece. So let's think about Call of Duty. Where is Call of Duty right now? It's on Xbox. It's on PC. It's on PlayStation. It's on mobile phones. Okay. If we look at the biggest customers of AKB in order, it's PlayStation, then it's Apple, then it's Google Play or whatever, and then it's Xbox in terms of revenue generated. Okay, so those are the big four. After that, PC is in there as well. Call of Duty does not exist on Nintendo Switch platforms. Does not exist there. You cannot buy a Call of Duty on Nintendo Switch. They're cut off immediately. They're not included in this conversation. Okay, let's look at what Microsoft has done. They've wholly embraced PC launches day and date. Everything on Xbox is day and date on PC as well. There is no console exclusivity anymore. They're completely embraced PC. They've completely embraced mobile. All the Game Pass, all of that stuff is on mobile. Okay, so who is the only section of gamers that could potentially be hurt in this deal?
Ding, 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 ding,
PlayStation
ding, ding.
Gamers. That's it. They're the only ones that could potentially lose out. So what major negative implications for all of gamers could this potentially have? I don't get it. I just don't get it. I don't get where Sony's coming from. I'm at a loss for words here, Jason. Help me out.
Look, I mean, you know where I stand on this whole thing. We both watched this, basically this law analyst video where he kind of goes through and breaks down this whole thing and goes into a big thing. And one of the things that he says, even he as like a law like expert, that yes. he is shocked by and caught off guard. He's like, pretty much, everything that's going on is pretty standard. Like everything right now is pretty standard. There's no reason to get bent out of shape. Pretty much everything that's going on now is pretty normal stuff.
Right.
But what completely shocked him and he was caught off guard with is how public Sony has been with coming out and saying negative and speaking out against this whole thing. He goes, normally all of that happens where, they basically write a letter or they do something that goes direct to, they do a petition. They do something that goes direct to the boards for these, not these big public statements because, and he specifically says, what's dangerous about that is because it opens you up to having Microsoft respond and usually respond in a way that they now have time to then, take what you say, respond in a way that is against that, essentially. It's almost like okay, you say something and then we have time to digest it and then combat what you said and give a really good answer back, right? And correct, so he's like, it's not real smart actually on Sony to do this. And you're basically taking the whole console wars, which is basically always just been, you know, like you, and I'm just as an example, you feel this, you know, PlayStation guy, you know, and me, this Xbox guy, and, or even better, let's go, you know, the one that I see all the time is Android versus Apple. See it all the time, right? And people are like, I have a Samsung. I love my Android. I'm pro Android. Apple sucks. And then there's people who have Apples and they're like, Android sucks. I'll always have an Apple. And you have these like back and forth at each other. But they're basically just the users, right? The companies aren't like at each other's throats. It's just the individual users. Well, now you have the actual companies and their billions of dollars at each other's throats, which means they're also dragging sponsors and all of the, everybody else into all of this and through, you know, the mud on everything. It's creating some like bad press in some ways. And they're like, Sony is the one who's doing this. So he goes, for sure, it may totally backfire hard on Sony.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's put these quotes that came out on Wednesday in context to everything else that's been happening. We just talked about this Sony State of Play where they had a whole segment on all the exclusive content that's coming to Hogwarts Legacy. Yeah. Hogwarts Legacy, a multi-platform third-party game releasing everywhere, has a bunch of exclusive content just for PlayStation gamers.
Yeah.
Okay. Yesterday, the Call of Duty beta was starting.
Yep.
Guess who has exclusive first access to it?
Yep.
PlayStation gamers. They also have exclusive skins and exclusive DLC modes for the game.
Yeah.
For Call of Duty, the game we're literally fucking talking about.
Yeah. Yep. Right? No, hey, y'all can't just, y'all, it's not fair for y'all to have that and it be exclusive. Hey, look at all this exclusive stuff we have for the game that we're saying shouldn't be exclusive.
It's crazy. And I see people online that are like, oh, well, it's totally different, like skins to like taking the whole game completely. Microsoft are not going to take the game.
Yeah.
They said it repeatedly that they're not going to remove Call of Duty from PlayStation platforms.
It's their largest market of the game.
Exactly. Now, people are like, oh, well, they've only guaranteed for 5 years, and that's not good enough. They need to guarantee it in perpetuity. No, they don't. Who would ever do that? What if like, in 4 years' time, PlayStation is bought by Pornhub, and Microsoft are like, yeah, we're not dealing with them at all.
Right.
Right? I mean, crazier things have happened. I get it. But like, you don't in a business sense ever lock yourself in perpetuity to somebody because you always want to allow yourself the flexibility in the future should something go crazy, right? What if you get to the point where no longer PlayStation are the console market leader and Xbox want to exert some power on PlayStation to get Game Pass over there?
Right.
Does that suck for PlayStation gamers? Possibly. Should PlayStation be worried about that? Hell yeah, they should be worried about that. But like,
oh, and by the way, who's to say that they don't, Microsoft doesn't turn and, you know, this becomes access of now Call of Duty to Nintendo in the future on stuff, right? Like, you know, you just never know.
Yeah, you don't. You never know. So all I'm trying to get at is that we're arguing about whether or not a game is going to go exclusive that Microsoft have stated very clearly is not going to go exclusive, at least over the next 5 years. Maybe in 5 years' time, Call of Duty is not important. That's maybe true in too. 5 years. Yeah. You don't know what will happen across this time. But what I think Sony players should be looking at, what PlayStation gamers should be looking at, and what I look at it is Sony have basically decided, and they said it in no uncertain terms, that there is no way they could ever make a game like Call of Duty.
Right, absolutely.
So they just don't even want to try.
Right.
And so they're so hung up and focused on stopping this because they want to ensure Call of Duty on their platforms because they have no interest in even trying to get a game like this. Okay. We've sat here and lamented for years that there's been no first-person shooters from Sony first party. That's not going to suddenly stop.
Which, by the way, like again, I'm butting in for just a second, but I think it's important to say, again, how PlayStation at times talks out of both sides of their mouth. Because in one sentence, they will say, we, PlayStation, make the best games that hit market. We make the best games. Yep. We can't make a game that good. Nothing else exists. We can't do it. It's not possible. They have this gold mine. The problem that I have with it is they act like Call of Duty has this, like, basically, like there is, it's almost like they're saying they have a patent and we can't, they own the tech to this. And so it's impossible. No, I don't. Yeah. It's just a freaking game. It's a shooter.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Yeah, but, you know, do a good SOCOM game. You know, you've got Bungie now. Figure out how to make live service. You come up with a SOCOM game that's on PlayStation consoles and put that out there and compete and try to compete. They don't want to. They don't seem to want to. The last thing I'll say is that I'll just reiterate that I think it is unbelievably rich for the company who built its entire market dominance. And let's be very certain and clear about this. They are the market leader in consoles by far. Mm-hmm. Okay. They are the dominant player in the market right now. They've built that entirely on exclusive content. That's been their whole way of getting to the top was the exclusive games that they had, the exclusive marketing deals that they inked. They had stuff with, I mean, they have stuff with everything, like the Batman Arkham Knight game, Call of Duty,
Spider-Man.
Well, Spider-Man was exclusive to the console, but yeah, Spider-Man. Red Dead Redemption, I think, had stuff on PlayStation. They had marketing deals with, I'm trying to think of, I like had it and it's gone away now. Destiny. They had
Spider-Man, not necessarily the game Spider-Man. For instance, if you wanted to play Marvel's Avengers, you only had had Spider-Man on PlayStation.
That's true. Yep. Even though Marvel's Avengers was multi-platform, Destiny 2 had a ton of marketing deals with Bungie or with PlayStation, where they had lots of exclusive content there too. That's how they've got to this point. And so I just find it extremely rich for them to sit here and cry foul over potential exclusivity when, you know, that's how they built their market position. I think what's become clear to me, at least, or at least my speculation, is that for the first time ever, they see an acquisition and thus an addition to Game Pass that makes Game Pass competitive to PlayStation. And I think that they're worried about that. I think that's what this is about. I think that they believe that these additions to Game Pass will make it so attractive to players that they'll want to start, that enough players will start shifting towards that model that they will lose revenue on PlayStation, a significant amount of revenue on PlayStation. And so I think for the first time, they see a deal that is threatening to them from a Game Pass perspective. Yeah. And I think that's why they're fighting it so hard.
And again, I'll go back to Sony cares about hardware, right? And I believe that they look at this in terms of let's go 5 years. Let's go, right? We talk about the normal lifespan for a console, 7 years, right? Let's go five years. That puts us where PlayStation 5 is essentially 7 years old now. Yeah, right? They're going to be looking at a new one, right? Mm-hmm. And at that point, they are looking at, okay, when we need to come out with our new set of hardware, how many people at that point are ready to upgrade to the next thing and are like, yeah, I don't think they're going to do what I did back in the day when I swapped to Xbox One because I was a PlayStation guy at that point. And they're going to compare the two features and benefits and go, yeah, I think I'm moving to the other one. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's... I think that's what they fear. They fear in 5 years losing their hardware.
Yep. I agree. More than anything, I'm just ready for the story to be over because I'm tired of talking about it.
The last little thing I will put on here is from watching this guy's video. I found it really informative. He goes into some detail about, because I had questions even. I'm like, okay, what does it matter with this, you know, EU board? Like, what happens if America approves it, but EU disapproves it? And he goes into some detail and talks about a bunch of that stuff, which I really appreciated. And long story short is there's about 1,000 different variants of what could happen. But if basically everyone approves it and one or two doesn't,
Yes.
There's a ton of pressure, and it's most likely to happen that those two get pressured into approving it. And or if they don't, they get at least will approve it with small little concessions. And if not, they can be like sued, and there would be basically a lot of, because everyone else approved it, they're very likely to lose. The board. So that was, that was good hearing that, because I really didn't know what was going to happen in this event. And I was asking those questions myself. So it was good to see that.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't even want to pretend to try to like relay this information in any way, informative way. So this is one of those cases where, listeners, I want to point you to Hoge Law. It's H-O-E-G, Hoge. He does tons of videos. He is a professional certified boarded attorney in the state of Michigan who specializes entirely in mergers and acquisitions. That is his field.
Right.
And he comments on the video game industry a lot, especially over the last couple of years, because it's been very active in M&A. And he does these videos all the time to help break this stuff down for us, layman gamers that don't understand the law. So yes, Hoge Law, H-O-E-G Law is the YouTube channel. I highly recommend you going checking him out. All right. Our last news topic, I'll read this and we'll say a few things and then we'll move on. And major news for Halo and Xbox fans, 343 Industries studio head Bonnie Ross has announced that she is leaving the Halo developer. In the following message shared online, Ross said that she's stepping down after 15 years in charge of the studio and more than 28 years in gaming at Microsoft. Quote, "While I had hoped to stay with Halo until the winter update, I am letting you know I will be leaving 343 and attending to a family medical issue. I am incredibly proud of the work everyone at 343 Industries has done with Halo Infinite, the Master Chief Collection, the Halo television series, and so much more. It has been an honor to serve alongside the team for the last 15 years and to be a part of a universe that I love. Thank you to everyone in the Halo community for your support. Halo's future is bright. I cannot wait for all of you to experience what we have in store and to cheer alongside you as a fan at the Halo World Championship in October," end quote. In response, Microsoft said the following, quote, "We are thankful for her leadership of 343, during which the team launched Halo 4, Halo 5, Halo Master Chief Collection, the Halo television series, and Halo Infinite. We wish her all the best," end quote. Before I get into the second set of news, I just want to kind of address this first of all. Bonnie Ross founded 343 Studios. She worked for Microsoft. She worked in their gaming department. When Bungie split and they left, Microsoft were looking at closing up shop on Halo. Bonnie Ross convinced them that Halo was a very important franchise to Xbox and convinced them to open a studio dedicated to making Halo games. She co-founded the studio and she led it for the last 15 years of its existence, or for the first 15 years of its existence. So it's important to understand where her role was. And then the other thing I want to highlight is that she talks in this thing or in her message or whatever that she had hoped to stay until the winter update. So I read that as she was always leaving. She's leaving a little bit earlier than she originally was going to, but she was always leaving. And I have a suspicion that this is one of those, "Bonnie, we would like you to step down from head of..."
Well, I'm glad you said it, because I was going to sit here and say the cynic in me says, I'm not calling you a liar, but I'm calling you a liar. Because the next thing you'll talk about leads me to say that they just absolutely did the whole like, you know, the whole like, oh, because of a medical, like, again, there could be something going on. And I'm just like, the cynic in me just feels like this was a force out. And of course it was eventually I was going to leave. Well, eventually you were going to retire or whatever. Right. And move on something. But this very much felt like a, hey, we've had some really bad stuff going on with Halo. The press hasn't been great. I mean, we've been sitting here saying, I mean, I've seen multiple news articles say Halo should remove, I mean, Xbox should remove Halo from 343. And me and you kind of had some of that conversation. And I was for like, sure. Well, then what the hell is 343? Because all they have is freaking Halo. So
yeah,
I think there's a ton of pressure right now on Microsoft about Halo. And then for this just to suddenly happen, very much feels like they were like, yeah, we need to make a change.
Yeah. Agreed. I mean, the winter update was coming in November. I strongly believe that there is a legit medical emergency or medical issue here, and my thoughts are with her. I don't wish her any ill in that regard. I do also strongly believe that she was told, ship this, and it's time for change.
Yeah.
And that this happened, and so they just agreed to go ahead and pull everything forward and let it happen now, and gave her an out as well.
Yeah.
I think that she gave a lot to Xbox and Microsoft over the years, and even to Halo, and we shouldn't see it all negatively. And so I'm glad that Microsoft gave her an out in a good way, but I'm also glad that Microsoft have made the change and have given new leadership to 343. And let's talk about that real quick. Following all of this news, it was announced that Microsoft is restructuring 343 Industries leadership team by splitting her role into three separate positions. First, 343's head of production will be Pierre Hintze, or 343's current head of production, Pierre Hintze, is to become studio head effective immediately. Second, Brian Koski, who previously headed up marketing for Halo, will become GM of the franchise. And finally, business operations and esports head Elizabeth Van Wyk will oversee business and operations for 343. Finally, Halo Studio 343 Industries is reportedly set to lose another member of its team in the shape of engineering director David Berger. That's according to a Lords of Gaming report corroborated by Windows Central. Former FASA interactive developer Berger has been with 343 for over 14 years and at Microsoft for over 20. During his time at 343, he built the 120-strong engineering team from the ground up, according to his LinkedIn profile. He helped ship Halo 4, Halo 5, and Halo Infinite, including leading development of the Slipspace engine used for the most recent series entry. A lot of change happening over there. I think it's very interesting that they split Bonnie Ross's role into three different positions. That suggests that she was doing way too much, and that they needed to make a change there. I think that Jason has lost headphones again. He's had this trouble recently. But I think that, you know, it shows that she was probably stretched way too thin and probably tried to have way too much control over things that she didn't need to have control over. And so it's probably a good thing that they're kind of splitting this role up the way that they are, and making sure that, you know, maybe the studio can be led in a more appropriate direction moving forward.
I mean, I get that. I kind of look at it two different ways too, which is, you know, there's that. That's the glass half full take, the glass half empty take, which I see both sides would be like, okay, you take a central leadership role and then move it to three leadership roles, and then you turn into too many chiefs, right? Does anything get done, or do they all end up where, you know, you have someone that's being told to do something three different ways, or you have someone and one of them is telling you to do this, and then the other one's telling you to do that, and it's like nothing gets that. Like, so this can go both good and bad. In that one, maybe, you know, it's not a singular mindset that is, you know, sometimes having fresh eyes on things makes things better, right? Where they get multiple different voices, and we get a better product out of it because they collaborate, right? So that's the good part. Then there's the negative part, which sometimes you have not one voice leading, and it kind of convolutes things or confuses things, or so I don't know which one this is, but you know, that's kind of the two ways typically something like this can go.
Yeah, I mean, I view it as Pierre Hintze is coming in to lead the studio, lead the output of the studio in terms of its gaming product.
Yeah.
Brian Koski is coming in to be the GM of the franchise. His concern is going to be all of the other media, the show, the books, the cross media with other, you know, working with Paramount Plus and all of that kind of stuff. I feel like that's going to be his role.
Okay.
And then Elizabeth Van Wyk is business and operations, right? Like, you know, marketing, things like that. I think that's what her
and when you say that that way, that I mean, that makes sense. That works. I'd be fine with that. You know, That would work.
And I think the other thing to mention is that Pierre Hintze.
That way.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing to mention is that Pierre Hintze comes from the MCC team. He was brought into 343 to fix the Master Chief Collection. We've talked about on the show before how that was a real, real mess at launch. And eventually they worked and worked and worked on that game, and they've got it into a wonderful place. I mean, it has basically the same Steam player account as Halo Infinite does right now. So, you know, I think of anybody, there's some hope here that someone like him would be coming in to hopefully turn Halo Infinite around. But we will have to wait and see. So that's all I've got to say on this topic. I think it's good change. I think it's been needed for a while. And maybe there's some hope for 343, but we'll have to wait and see how this rolls out. All right, let's move on to the game announcements. And there was a bunch of them, so I will try to be quick. And Jason, you'll just have to jump in if there's one you really want to talk about. Jason, you've still muted yourself.
I am muted. Yes, I'm sorry. All I was going to say is some of these are were in some of the state of plays, if you were. And so
correct.
But yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, I'm just going to kind of start reading for the audience. And then, Jason, if there's something you want to jump in, just let us know or let me know. Just jump in there and say what you got to say. All right, number one, Infinity Ward was officially revealed or has officially revealed the release date of Warzone 2.0. The second iteration of the popular Battle Royale will be released on November 16th, which will also mark the start of Season 1 for Modern Warfare 2. This will feature a new sandbox mode and brand new play space, and it will be available on basically everywhere, PS5, PS4, Xbox Series, Xbox One, PC, etc. Additionally, the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 beta begins this weekend. As you're listening to the show, you've probably already jumped in. It'll be for PlayStation players from September 18th through the 26th, and then Xbox players will be able to jump in an open access from September 24th through 26th. Jason, are you going to jump into this?
Yeah, so all I'll say is I've seen a little bit about Warzone 2. I was not a Warzone 1 person, but from what I have seen, there are some things here that have me, you know, as a Battle Royale guy who plays a lot of Apex, and I've spent a good amount of time in Fortnite, there's some things that I'm intrigued by that look like sure. unique and like, you know, something that's new to this, you know, games type. One of the things is, you know, basically all these games, you have a ring essentially that like shrinkens the map and gets you smaller and smaller and forces players into each other, right?
Right.
I don't know if you saw, but on this, they've got where the map gets smaller and smaller, and then at one point it divides into three, and there's three different rings. And then they shrink and get really small, and then they like get to like the basically to the where they're their smallest of the three separates, and then they like almost like beeline in toward each other, so it then forces the three rings in toward each other, and so your ring your like circle like is, let's call it a gas wall or whatever around you, so you can't leave it, but your like ring is actively moving, so your That's rings are coming toward each other. But what it could mean is you could still have, you know, multiple teams with inside that moving ring. So you're trying to like, you know, you may be forced into combat with each other in a ring that is physically moving. Like it's going to have like a real unique, and then those three rings could all have teams in them that then force into each other. Like that part
was like pretty hectic.
That's pretty unique. I've not seen that. Like that part, I thought, oh, that could be pretty cool. So that part I really liked. The next thing was one of the things that I never liked about Warzone was the like grind that it took to essentially, everything was about loadouts, and you got like better weapons or you like got upgrades for having weapons. And so what I didn't like is as a new gamer coming in, it felt like there was like a competitive advantage for people who play a lot more because they have better equipment than you. And so I'm like, well, what's the point? Right. Whereas in these other games that I play, now, I might loot something as I come across it in a game, okay, but not just because I've played more than you, I'm better than you, right?
Right.
I didn't like that aspect. It looks like they've tamed that way down in 2.0 in that it still is going to exist, but now it's like, okay, when I play with and gain experience or whatever on an AR, I unlock all of the AR stuff, not that one gun specific. So like the old Warzone was very much like you had to like level everything to be able to get it. This is like bringing the grind like way down. So that's part good to hear. Sounds better. So anyway, I was not a Warzone 1 guy, but I definitely am interested in 2, and we'll see how it goes.
For sure. All right. You'll be able to check that out pretty soon. Moving on, number 2, Microsoft has officially confirmed the HD remaster of GoldenEye 007 for Xbox Game Pass, in addition to a Nintendo Switch release in 2023. Quote, the original experience has been updated and improved control options, native 16:9 resolution up to 4K Ultra HD, a consistent refresh rate, and a full complement of achievements to unlock, developer Rare said. So you can go check that out
I think is hilarious on those things is when it's like they give you resolution up to 4K, you're going to be able to see those polygons really sharp. It's not like the graphics I don't understand that. But anyway, go ahead.
I think people are going to realize this game has not aged well, but we'll see. All right, number 3, Capcom has announced that the closed beta for Street Fighter 6's Battle Hub will take place next month, October 7th through 10th. As revealed during Capcom's TGS 2022 online program, the closed beta will be held on PS5, Xbox Series X, and PC for those 3 days and will feature crossplay for all 3 platforms. Number 4, Sony Interactive Entertainment has announced a PC release date of October 19th for Uncharted Legacy of Thieves Collection. Legacy of Thieves contains remasters of Uncharted 4 and its expansion, The Lost Legacy. I loved Uncharted 4. I just think it's weird that PC players will not get 1 through 3. Kind of odd.
I loved all the Uncharted's. They're fantastic games.
Yeah. Did you play Uncharted?
Oh, yeah. I played all of the Uncharted.
Okay. Yep. Excellent. Yeah. All right. Number 5, Level 5's Ni No Kuni series is officially coming to Xbox. We mentioned this earlier. Publisher Bandai Namco announced on Thursday, September 15th. Ni No Kuni Wrath of the White Witch is available now on Series X and S and Xbox One via Game Pass, while Part 2 Revenant Kingdom, which features animation from Studio Ghibli, will be released for Xbox platforms sometime in 2023. For those of you interested, Part 1 originally released on PS3 in January 2013, with the enhanced edition releasing on PS4, Switch, and PC in September of 2019. The Part 2 originally released on PS4 and PC in March of 2018 and on Switch in September of 2021. Number 6, Electronic Arts has announced that The Sims 4 will be going free to play on October 18th. From that date, players will be able to download the base game for free on PC, Mac, PS5, PS4, Xbox Series XS, and Xbox One. I have no interest in Sims 4, but you know, there's a lot of people out there that might really be interested in it.
There's a lot of people who really like Sims.
Yeah, for sure. All right, number 7, Yakuza spinoff Like a Dragon Ishin, we mentioned this already, has received a February 21st, 2023 release date. And that was revealed during the State of Play, PlayStation State of Play. Number 8, another Yakuza game, Yakuza 8, was revealed during the Ryuga Gotoku Studio Summit livestream and will officially be titled Like a Dragon 8. I love the name of that studio, Ryuga Gotoku. I think it literally means like a dragon in Japanese, and that's the name of their studio. I think it's so cool. Dope.
Yeah.
I love it. Yakuza 8 will arrive in 2024 for PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, and Xbox Series consoles, and Windows and Steam. The game will once again be an RPG and feature dual protagonists. Finally, number 9, or at least finally for Yakuza, number 9, Sega also announced a third Yakuza title this week, Like a Dragon Gaiden, The Man Who Erased His Name. The spinoff will take place between Yakuza 6 and 7 and tell a story of what happened to Kiryu Kozama, Sega said on Wednesday. It will be released on all platforms in 2023.
The only thing I have to say about that is The Man Who Erased His Name is such a terrible title. That's got to be so much cooler sounding in Japanese.
Yeah.
The translation, the best they could do was like, we'll go with this. It's a terrible game. But anyway.
Yeah. Not great. I agree. All right, we're almost there, folks. Number 10, Microsoft has announced that Discord chat is now available for everyone on Xbox consoles. The feature, which was made available for selected Xbox insiders in late July, enables users to chat with anyone on Discord via voice channels or group calls directly from Xbox Series XS and Xbox One consoles. The one thing I'll say about this is that there is no integrated Discord into Xbox consoles. So you have to have the Discord app, the Xbox app, you have to have your Xbox connected to your Xbox app. You start the call on the Discord app and then transfer it to your console via the Xbox app. And then you can chat with your headset on Xbox as normal. It's a really roundabout process, and I hope that they evolve it with native Discord support eventually. Number 11, Xbox announced the Forza Horizon 5 will be getting a free 10-year anniversary update on October 11th. We already talked about that, so I won't go into any more on that one. And finally, number 12, Konami Digital Entertainment today announced the return of the Suikoden series with Suikoden 1 and 2 HD remastered, releasing for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Steam, and Nintendo Switch next year. Wow, a lot of stuff. I told you, it's like a little mini E3 in the middle of September. Yeah, crazy. Upcoming releases, I'm not going to go through all of these. There's a lot of stuff. We're about to get into the big release time frame, but I will say coming up for the rest of September at least, you've got Shovel Knight Dig on Switch, PC, Apple Arcade, the Grounded 1.0 release on Xbox One, Series X, and PC. I know you're excited for that. And finally, Valkyrie Elysium on PlayStation 5 and PlayStation 4. Those three games coming out the 23rd, 27th, and 29th of September, respectively. Game Pass. Oh, by the way, Jason, you'll notice I removed the free games section. I started this last week. This is all for you.
I love it. I love it.
But I will still mention Game Pass games. Assassin's Creed Odyssey is available now, as we mentioned earlier. Bethesda's Deathloop will be available on September 20th, as we mentioned earlier. Finally, Microsoft also announced that Valheim will hit PC Game Pass on September 29th. I know that's a very popular game. That one's coming over to PC Game Pass before the end of the month. This all follows previously announced Xbox game titles for this month. Disney Dreamlight Valley, Opus Magnum, Train Sim World 3, Ashes of the Singularity, League of Super Pets, You Suck at Parking, and finally, Metal Hellsinger, which Metal Hellsinger just released this past week and got storming reviews. So maybe go check that one out. That's kind of like a Doom-like game. All right. Anything else, Jason? Or are we ready to get out of this
place? I'll say one final thing. So for PC gamers, one of the big things with PC gamers is we mod our games, or we have the ability to mod our games. The games do a lot of modding, blah, blah, blah. There is a ton of these games that get lots of mods. And like the Xbox app does not allow you to mod them. So if I say have a game that is available on, you know, multiple stores, it's like, I have this game and it's free on Game Pass, but I'd have to pay for it for $30 on Steam. I could mod the Steam version, but I can't the Xbox version, even though they're both PC and they're both on my, and the mods exist. It's just won't let you mod. So if I could make any like shout out of, the Xbox execs who are listening to our show, of course, let me freaking mod the games on Game Pass on PC. Holy hell. Anyway, outside that, there we go.
All right. Well, I hope they change that eventually for you PC nerds out there. Until then, I feel sorry that you are less of an experience for a free game.
I know. It's like I'm a bum like you consolers. I'm at Xbox Game Pass.
I don't even know what mods are. Yeah. Actually, no, I do know what they are, but I've never experienced them because I do not play on PC. Yeah. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening here to this 113th episode of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. I know it was a big one. I do apologize, but hey, we actually had some news to talk about for once, finally, some real stuff. So you know what? I take that back. I don't apologize. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Remember, like, subscribe, review on your podcasting app of choice. If you have any questions for the show, DM us on Twitter or Facebook. We'll be happy to read those out on the show. The show will be back again next week with episode number 114. Have a great weekend. Stay safe and game hard.